ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 5 चैप्टर 8 टेक्स्ट 31। We'll repeat the word to word translation. Translation proper by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Remaining in that ashram, the great king Bharat Maharaj was now very careful not to fall victim to bad association. Without disclosing his past to anyone, he remained in that ashram and ate dry leaves only. He was not exactly alone, for he had the association of the super soul. In this way, he waited for death in the body of a deer. Bathing in that holy place, he finally gave up that body. Purport. Holy places like Vrindavan, Hardwar, Prayag and Jagannath Puri are especially meant for the execution of devotional service. Vrindavan specifically is the most exalted and preferred holy place for Vaishnava devotees of the Lord, Lord Krishna, who are aspiring to return back to Godhead, the Vaikuntha planets. There are many devotees in Vrindavan who regularly bathe in the Jamuna, and this cleanses all the contamination of the material world. By constantly chanting and hearing the holy names and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, one certainly becomes purified and becomes a fit candidate for liberation. However, if one purposefully falls victim to sense gratification, he has to be punished for at least for one lifetime, like Bharat Maharaj. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 5th canto, 8th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled A Description of the Character of Bharat Maharaj. Today, this very beautiful pastime of Bharat Maharaj. This section of his life, where he has now transmigrated from the body of a great king, ruler of the entire world, to the humble body of a deer, and is on his journey further to the body of a very, very great Vaishnav named as Jada Bharat. Krishna consciousness is a continuous process. Ahetuki apati hata. And it is wonderful that once begun, it only ends when you go back to Godhead. There is never interruption. This is the glory of Krishna consciousness, that even though in the story of Bharat Maharaj, many devotees in the last few weeks have extracted such wonderful thoughts, feelings and realizations from this story. And we have learnt a lot from this various, very, very instructive pastime of this story. So I really don't know much what to speak, actually. Everything has been spoken. This is the last sloka of the chapter. So, in one sense, we see an example of a person on the heights of devotional perfection and has fallen down. So does this make us hopeless? Does it bring into our minds a feeling of despondency? That even at this stage, one can fall down. So the mind can tell us It's very difficult. Probably we will not be able to make it in this life or even in a couple of lives. Look at the stakes. Look at the odds against you. From Bhava Bhakti, if you can fall down, you are such a neophyte devotee. What is the hope for you? And look at the movement around. There are so many devotees sometimes, you see, going high and then falling down. So that makes us feel that Krishna consciousness is very, very difficult. For those who have been in the movement for some time, they can feel the pressure of this movement now. Whenever we came in, it wasn't like what we feel now. There was much feeling of newness, exploring the unknown and unfounded realm of a new world of devotees, feasting, festivals. But after being in this moon for some time, we feel, yes, it's a heavy process. It requires serious commitment. And it is difficult. The external acts of devotion are not difficult. Because we sit in one place, we chant. Sit in one place and we eat prasad. We bow down our bodies. We learn some techniques of dressing the deities. These external acts of devotion are not difficult. But the internal spirit, the motivation, the consciousness, the bhavana, is always being challenged by the forces of Maya. The struggle is not so much external. To some extent, yes, it is external. Getting up in the morning and controlling our tongue, like that. But it's more internal. So why do we always present Krishna consciousness as being very easy then? When we present to devotees, it's Krishna consciousness is fun, it's easy. Just chanting, dancing, feasting. And Prabhupada was asked, Prabhupada, no, but we do also deity worship. We also do this, devotion. We also do this. He said, no, it's only chanting, dancing, feasting. He insisted on emphasizing the fact that it is a very simple process. It is actually chanting, dancing, feasting. So you have a dichotomy. On one hand, we see Bharat Maharaj's example, it makes us feel that Krishna consciousness is very difficult. And the Acharya is always portraying Krishna consciousness as being very simple. Yes, manmana bhava, madbhakto, madhyaji. Only four things you have to do. Only four things. You'll come to me, Krishna says, without fail. So it's easy. On one side, we say, bhau sagar. The word sagar itself brings out infinity of water. Standing all there, you know, I'm supposed to swim this ocean of birth and death. Impossible. So, we are always being told in our pravachans that crossing ocean, birth and death, mama maya duratyaya. Wow. Impossible. If Krishna is saying it is duratyaya, and if we start thinking it is easy, then you may be stupid then. That's all. If Krishna is saying it is duratyaya. But then you have the other side. Mama vai prabhadyante. Another side we say, no. When you surrender to Krishna, that big ocean, you know what happens to it? It shrinks. Really? Yeah, it shrinks. That infinite quantity of water, of billions of gallons, shrinks into just 50 ml of water, which is present in the calf, footprint of a calf. Then brings, what does that analogy bring to our hearts? Hope. Isn't it? So, we find in Krishna consciousness always these two extremes being presented. Two opposite dichotomies. Two various diagonally opposite things. Difficult and easy. Impossible, very easily attainable. Krishna is very far. He's in the Golok Vrindavan. Chakravarti Thakur, in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, actually explains, gives the distances, physical distances, of how far is this planet and that planet, and how far is the sun, and how far is the Viraja river, and beyond Viraja, how far is the Vaikuntha planet. That is all given in fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. It will be coming now. So the actual distance between this planet and Vaikuntha planets is given. It's far. We count far distance in terms of light years. The time it takes for light to travel in 1 second. 10 raised to 8. 3 into 10 raised to 8. Bhakta Aniruddha is scored 90% in 10th standard. Very bold. So he's pit-pat with his physics. 3 into 10 raised to 8 meters per second is the speed of light. And that distance, it travels in just 1 second. So how much, when you say the distance traveled in 1 minute or 1 year, how much is that distance? So distance between galaxies are considered in terms of light years. 1,000 light years, 10,000 light years. Wow. That's just a material world. 10,000 light years. Light is traveling infinitely. And where is Vaikuntha? Way beyond our understanding. And then up there in the top of Vaikuntha is Golok Vrindavan. It's infinite distance. Mr. Krishna is very close. He manifests himself in the form of the holy name. The most unapproachable, the most distant person becomes very easy approachable. So again you have a dichotomy. Something very far and still very close. He said, Yatra Gayanti Mad Bhakta Tatrishtavana. So that person who is very far, whom you cannot see, cannot touch, you cannot feel, nothing, becomes easily one who can feel his presence when pure devotees chant the holy names of Krishna. Right? So what is that factor which makes these apparently unsurmountable, difficult things to become so attainable? How do we bridge this huge gap? Talking of sense control, we know how difficult sense control is. All of us here are sadhakas. We know how difficult what energy it takes to really, you know, control our senses and mind. It's so difficult. It practically takes our whole consciousness. Gets consumed in this process of trying to control it. Very difficult, very difficult. So on one side you have a difficult process. And then Jananivas Prabhu explained a few days back when he was here that it is we who make the things uncomplicated. He said, wherever the mind goes, just think of Krishna. He said, don't expect things of perfection to come in the future. Most of us are thinking that I am not pure now. But you know, I will become. I'm doing all that, what is necessary. So we are more looking at the future. But he seemed to say that don't even try for perfections. Don't look for siddhis. Siddhi in devotional life, siddhi. Said, whatever is happening now is perfection. As long as you're thinking of Krishna now, it is perfection. So the moment mind goes off somewhere, bring it to Krishna. That is, you are perfectly situated right now. That is itself, because ultimately when you become pure, what will happen ultimately? Your mind will be in thinking of Krishna. But now when the mind goes off somewhere, what you should do? Just bring it back to Krishna. That is perfection. So he seemed to indicate strongly that do not complicate the process. As we sometimes, you know, we have philosophical complicated analysis of, you know, scriptures, and we just go into such subtleties of the details of how things really work. But he said, just bring the mind to Krishna. So he made things appear to be very simple and easy. When I'm doing some service and my mind goes off, as long as I'm just vigilant, I just, okay, just think of Krishna. That Krishna, please, sorry. I shouldn't be thinking of these things. Forgive me. And put your mind in Krishna. Chant his names. Bring it back. That is what Krishna wants to see. That's all. You are thinking of him. Very simple. So this big gap between the unattainable and make it easily accessible, that gap is bridged by the factor of mercy. That is called as mercy. And that is actually a devotee's real hope. Krishna consciousness is never a hopeless process. Devotees can feel depressed when they don't seem to be performing well. And the depression can actually become very heavy on your mind. And you lose utsaha. But if material life is hopeless, and if spiritual life also appears to be hopeless, then where do we go? Already we are being told material life is a hopeless situation. You just can't make it in material life. It's an impossible situation. You can never be happy, no matter what you do, like a fish out of water and all those examples given to us. And then if we also portray or feel the spiritual life is so difficult, it's impossible, then where is the hope? No, it is not true. There is unlimited hope in Krishna consciousness. Why? Because of factor of mercy. The factor of mercy is what makes everything easy, attainable, possible. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is a shloka which says that by the mercy of Gaur and Nitai, what is appearing to be impossible becomes very much easy. What is very difficult becomes attainable. When the intervening power of the mercy of Gaur and Nitai comes into play, then all those difficult things become easy. On one side you have example of Bharat Maharaj, you fell down from Bhava Bhakti, and on the other side you find a person who was just punctured by a boar and say, hey, haram, 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 and went back to Godhead. What is this? Here is a person who is trying to, real, how many years he must have put into the, he was living for some, how many arbudas, and some big figure is there. It's a massive figure, how many years he ruled and all that. It goes into arbudas, in a way beyond yugas also, I think so. And then he just falls down. And this person, he is, yavana, eating meat every day, doing all sinful activities, just walking down a jungle, and he gets poked in by a wild boar and says, haram, haram, haram. He is not even calling to God. He goes back to Godhead. So it's very depressing. He says, wow, this is damn bad, I wish some boar poked me also, and I said, Hare Krishna, and I went back to Godhead. So again, we have a dichotomy here. But what made him go back to Godhead is a factor of mercy. You have a young puppy, dogs, you get a dog's birth, it's a very degraded birth. By any standards, dog is a very low species. Vedic culture really says the last in the ladder of living beings or human beings is chandal, dog eater. He's like real bad. If you eat fish, it's okay. If you eat other things, fine. If you eat dogs, real, real low. Because the dog is the lowest, and if you eat that lowest, then you become actually the lowest. So chandal. So when you have a dog, and the dog happens to play with Nimai, Nimai is fondling it and playing with it and like that, and the dog becomes a pure devotee, starts marching down the road with raised hands and chants Hare Krishna, and as an airplane coming for a dog. Can you imagine a dog, a stupid puppy? There's so many litters here, on the road, just all these sucking the mother's breast and just all here and there. Just a nobody. But the intervening factor in that karmic cycle of that dog, which would have taken billions of years to come to human being probably, they say now you have to be a dog in that. Now the understanding now is given is that not just dog and then your next one. All the varieties of dogs. Alsatian and what is that? Whatever the dogs are. Dobler. So all varieties of dogs. Small ones, big ones, and those bushy ones, and those hairless ones. All of them. You have to become all these dogs. All whatever God has created, all dogs you have to become. You get a real taste of dog life perfectly. the street dogs and the fancy dogs in Beverly Park, all the dogs. And then you can go to the other one. So that dog's body, when will that fellow get a chance to come to human body And God knows when he'll get a chance to meet some devotee, and if he becomes ever a Vaishnav and go back to God, it's an impossible thing. Huh? And he might play with the dog, and an airplane comes from the spiritual sky to pick up. Come on, we'll take you back to God. Very wonderful. Very wonderful. Huh? That is the power of Kripa. We came sometime back, our Nirvana Maharaj had come here and was explaining how there was a drug addict. Somewhere in America, Prabhupada was walking down the road, and this fellow was such a crazy drug addict. He was sitting on the side of the road and completely long hair, dirty body. For months he did not take a bath, no food, living on the road. It's like lower than an animal, most wretched condition of life. And he would be just there, and Prabhupada would walk down the road every day for morning walk. And I think, I don't remember the whole past time, but he would just say, Prabhupada, 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 something like that. He would just do like that, you know. He just learned this word, Prabhupada, and said, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. And people would look at him, and it would be so disgusting, because of your flies at him, and it was so dirty. It was stinking bad smell as you walk by him. One day Prabhupada was walking, and he held on to Prabhupada's feet. He clenched his Prabhupada's feet. And he began to cry. And he began to cry at his feet, and his tears of bathing Prabhupada's lotus feet. And quite obviously, devotees would not allow such a thing to happen, because he was untouchable by any standards. Prabhupada expanded his heart and expanded the ocean of love from his heart and allowed him to do that. And he kept on sucking at Prabhupada's feet and like that, like a madman. He was really gone crazy, taking all that LSD and cocaine. He had gone into his brains, and all his neurons were fired, I'm sure. Intoxicated, really. And by doing that, that one interaction with Prabhupada and holding on to his feet, heart got transformed. And he joined a temple. He became a full-time devotee. He said, what? And then they found that everyone is going for Sankirtan party with books. That was book distribution era. Everyone was into book distribution. So this crazy person, I don't remember his name, this crazy person, completely mad, he also joined the event. He also entered into the van, Sankirtan van. So what can this guy do? You know, he doesn't know how to speak. He cannot even pronounce anything. He's gone really crazy. So he took these books and he went out and started distributing the books. And he couldn't say much. Prabhupada, Prabhupada, something he was saying. And he distributed one book, two books, and these people are all distributing. And he came back first with hands empty to another stack of books. He went to one store and just gave some books there. He did the maximum book distribution. Completely crazy man. So what really happened? The power of mercy. The power of mercy transformed him into a Vaishnava. So, because of this factor alone, we can feel always, always hopeful in Krishna consciousness. That even though I may be degraded, I cannot control my senses for nuts. And my mind is so hellishly contaminated with billions of years of dumped mic energy. That to wash this mic energy of, you know, lust and greed, it will take me how many years and years. So on my own sadhana bhakti, trivial small trial where I'm half the time sleeping, I'm half the time disoriented, I'm inattentive, and this is no hope that I can ever, Chetudrapana Marjanam can ever take place to the extent which is supposed to be. But this factor of mercy. Therefore, you find that Prabhupada once said that if you're not 100% also, if you're 90%, I'll take you back to Godhead. And you know, devotees look down. You know the story, right? 90% pure. 80%. And then Prabhupada brought down the discount to 70%. You just become 70% pure. And he said, just hold on to my dhoti. So it's not that what does it really mean? We have to try our very best, but even though we may not be really reaching up to the 35% marks also, or whatever, you're really trying, but you just keep failing, you keep failing. But the factor of mercy will make things possible. And like when you offer our deity puja, we say this mantras at the end. So, my dear Lord, whatever I have offered, without any devotion, please accept it and make it complete. Whatever I also offered with devotion, accept it out of your causeless mercy. It's a very striking paradox. That even if what I've offered is with devotion, you are not bound to accept it. You are independent. He said, oh, you know, what is your devotion? But even if there is devotion, and if you think not sufficient, whatever, please, out of your mercy, still accept it. If without devotion, accept it. With devotion, accept it. Somehow accept it. I want to do some service. Accept my devotion. Accept my humble, feeble attempt to serve you. That is factor of mercy. How do we think when we are worshipping the deities that, you know, it is reaching them? They are doing art, the mind is going off somewhere. Thinking of this and thinking of that. It's happening. At least me, it happens all the time. So our hope is what? Mercy. So in this way, there is never a need to feel discouraged. Because even the smallest service rendered to the Lord actually becomes unlimitedly pleased. There is a quality of the Lord called as nobility. Nobility is defined as a quality whereby if a small service is rendered to a particular person, he becomes unlimitedly grateful and remembers it always. That quality is called as nobility. It's a very rare quality in this world. Very rare quality. Parents keep on serving their children for years and raise them up with love and affection, struggling to maintain themselves, maintain the children. A child grows up and he completely forgets whatever the parents have done. And oftentimes you hear this dialogue, "Apne mere liye kya kiya hai?" Patients tell us this. You know, depressed patients come, they have to go to a psychiatrist. And the son or daughter is saying, "What have you done for me in life actually? Are you? What is this? He's given you birth, Baba. What do you mean what you have done for me? He gave you birth and he fed you, nourished you, raised you, educated you, sheltered you. Everything he has done for you. What has he not done for you? That's a good question. The child forgets. Takes a girl, marries her and runs off somewhere. No, absolutely no gratefulness. This is very common. An employee serves his boss for years nicely. And suddenly the boss feels that, no, I should fire this fellow. And just throws him off. He said, "Tomorrow you settle accounts." "Arey, I served this company for 30 years. I gave my prime of my youth to you. And one finding you just throw me off like this on the roads. Leave behind the car keys also. And, you know, what about that flat? You know, give it to that fellow. You give away everything and go away. No thanks. Thank you for giving so much." No, nothing. That is, in Kali Yuga, this nobility does not exist practically. Except among the Vaishnava community. But Krishna is the supreme of everything. He has this unlimited quality of nobility. So that gives us the hope. That the little service I have offered to the Lord, in my stupidity or in my deranged consciousness or out of devotion, whatever it is, the Lord, being kind, will never forget. So in the Ishvapanishad, that shloka comes, that, "My dear Lord, remember what I have done for you." That is my only hope. What a little thing I have done for you, please remember that. So remembering my services, what a little bit I have done, you know, that gives me grace. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu showed this in his wonderful pastime. In Lord Ram's Leela, we know this beautiful story of Bali and Sugriva. And Bali was little, inimical to his brother. And they were like, there's a conflict there. So Sugriva was very scared of his brother. Vali was very powerful, even more than Ravan. Very powerful. He used to carry Ravan in his armpit and run around. Vali was extremely powerful. He was inconquerable practically. So Sugriva was so scared of Vali that this man actually can, with his bow, he could sever these salt trees. So Ram, if you can do this, then I will really believe that you can help me out, and I'll become your ally if you can really match up with Vali's strength, because Vali is so powerful. I have tasted his punching and fisting and become black and blue all the time. So Lord Ram invoked his bow and arrow and he shot. He shot all the 7 salt trees through and through. And that arrow went down to Patal Loka and went up to Brahma Loka and then came back in his quiver. Are you satisfied? Yeah. Sugriva was very happy. You can do it. Because the first time we told him that you just kick this skeleton off. What is that? One demon was there. One demon. What is his name? Tumburu. Dundubi. Dundubi. So Vali could just kick his skeleton, some distance. And Ram said, okay, I will kick it. I will kick it 4 miles. He said, no, now the skeleton has dried up, so it's less heavy than that time when Vali killed it. A lot of flesh and blood was there. Now it is just a dead skeleton. So you try this one, shooting the bow and arrow. So anyway, Ram shot that arrow. Years later, Treta Yuga had passed away, Dwapar Yuga had passed away, Kali Yuga had entered. The same Lord again came as Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And on his travels in the forest, he saw the same 7 trees, the same souls in the sin. He saw them and remembered how that helped him in his leela. The trees are just trees. And it's again a very degraded soul living as trees. No piety, absolutely. Pious trees, just like that. So the Lord actually, in so much of love, bhav vibhor, we call it. Mahaprabhu was always like that. He went and embraced these trees. And it is said, historically written, documented, the trees just uprooted. And they sprung up and went back to Godhead. Right? In self same bodies. The Lord embraced the second tree. Just came out from the ground and just sprung back to Godhead. All 7 trees the Lord delivered back to Godhead. Why? Because they allowed themselves to be punctured through and through by that arrow of Lord Ram. So that assist him in. He never forgot that. Even after years later, the trees got their share of mercy. The story was narrated by Radhanath Swami in our hospital, emphasizing this point very strongly, that this is the Lord's kindness. He never forgets. And the spiritual master is like that. Being a representative of the Lord, he never forgets. If some devotee has done some service and even falls down, that devotee never leaves his guru's heart. And years later also, the guru will cry for him. The guru will pray for him. And the power of the prayer of the spiritual master will bring that devotee back. So there is so much hope in Krishna consciousness. That mercy, the love, mercy is love. Mercy and love are not different. That love of Krishna, the love of the spiritual master for his disciples, that is our saving grace. Therefore we say every day, Vando moi savadhana mate. Yahara prashade bhai bhava toriya. This bhava, toriya, tariya. This bhava is so difficult. But yahara prasade. But the power of your prasad, but the power of your mercy, this bhava will be, overcome. So therefore a devotee is always happy. Even if he is in a mess in his spiritual life, he still feels happy because there is some hope for me. There is the ray of hope for me. I don't have to really feel that everything is finished. I'm not able to get up in the morning, I'm not able to chant my rounds properly, my sense control is so poor, and I'm feeling so much like blaspheming devotees and fault finding is going on all the time and consciousness is completely finished. But still, if you just stick strong to the process, don't leave. That's the whole point is, we should never leave. Years ago, I went to Siddhama Sakha Prabhu's home, Vishwanath Prabhu's home, and there was a curtain and there was a nice plaque there. And I remember even years later, he said, written there, never like this, this size, and then bigger, never, 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 never. Six times it was written, never, and bigger, 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 bigger thing. Last size, give up. Never give up. Of course, there's a material slogan, never give up. Desire for sense gratification. You will get it one day. But it can be devotee for Krishna consciousness. So never, 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 I will never give up Krishna consciousness. No matter what happens. Because in Krishna consciousness there is always, always, always hope. But we say somebody is an ocean of mercy. Is not that means there has to be hope, right? Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu. Now if his Karuna Sindhu, then at least one drop he can spare for me. Why should I feel hopeless? Because when a person becomes hopeless, becomes despondent, that is a very powerful attack of Maya. And that happens with some of us. That we know the ideals, we know about what is supposed to be our performance, and we know what is our performance appraisal going to be based on. And you're not really able to match up with that, then we really feel despondent, is it not? You feel really dry. But that could be a very heavy attack of Maya when you feel despondent. Because then she just makes you feel so paralyzed that you won't even make the attempt to lift your bead bag and chant. She makes you feel completely hopeless and helpless. So that should never happen. Frustration in spiritual life can be of two types. Positive and negative frustration. Positive frustration means that you know that I am not able to, we know that we are not able to make it up. But taking the power of mercy, we feel hope and we really try again. Therefore, the example of a falling child who is learning to walk is very important. That we will often fall down from our expected standards. Because as we said, it is our nature is to always be fallible. But the child is learning to walk, but he never sits there, never gives up. He brushes his pants and shirts and again starts walking. That's a very important example for us. Never give up. And negative frustration means you are feeling so frustrated. So this, I do not want to try now. I try and I keep failing and I don't want to try now this time. It's finished. That's negative frustration. That means Maya has taken a heavy toll of your consciousness. And she will not even allow you to really get up and do anything. You just go into a state of gloom, go into a state of darkness, where there is no just light for you. That should never happen. The association of Vaishnavas is always our hope. We can always go up and open our hearts to somebody and take help. There will always be a purport of Prabhupada which will give you hope. There will always be a lecture which will give you hope. The greatest thing in the world actually is hope. The power of hope is very great. There is great power in hope. One day I will go back to Godhead, however far. That hope was the only factor of Mukunda when he was told that you will be getting the mercy of Krishna after 10 million births. I will not see your face. Such a rascal you are. Imagine somebody saying this. For us it was like a pastime. But the person who is actually standing there and hearing this, for him it is death. Now afterwards, Mahaprabhu called him afterwards. Immediately after 5 minutes he called him back. But imagine Mukunda's situation. Even if the guru were to tell you, I curse you that you will not get human life after 10 million births. Imagine what that person will think. He will go completely mad. He will commit suicide. Immediately go out and jump out from wherever, first floor, second floor, fifth floor, wherever, he just jump out first. He became completely despondent, Mukunda, is it not? He felt that his life was worthless. He was actually, he was dead. Spiritually, he just felt that I should die now. Internally, he was already dead. There's no hope for me. But then he said, I will see you in 10 million births. That sparked off an unlimited amount of hope in Mukunda's consciousness. And he became mad in hope. He started twirling and running and said, I will see. He became like that. I will see. And Mahaprabhu noted that he has faith. Hope is based on faith. The power of hope comes actually from faith. When you have strong faith in the mercy of Guru and Krishna, that means you have unlimited hope in Krishna consciousness. When you have poor faith, then you have poor hope also. Both are very strongly connected. Hope is actually a manifestation of our faith. So whereby hearing these scriptures, hearing these pastimes, all that we need to do is just keep on building that factor of hope. And if I just stick on to the process, and seeing that unlimited hope in Mukunda's, shouting and twirling, he becomes so intoxicated with that hope actually, that Mahaprabhu said, call him right now. And he was so intoxicated with hope, that he said, I will see. And I said, he's calling, he wants to see you right now. But no, I will see. He just went on like that. See, he wants to see you right now. And then he put him in front of Mahaprabhu. He said, Mukunda, I was only testing you. He said that. So, let us always be happy. A devotee, sukhe dukhe bhulo nako, the Thakur Bhaktivinoda said that a devotee will go through these phases of sukh and dukh. You will have sukh sometimes, will be very happy, and this and that. Festival is going on, very nice, everything is going well, bright. And dukh will come also, and things will not be bright. Irrespective, Mahaprabhu, Thakur Bhaktivinoda says, sukhe dukhe bhulo nako, vadane hari naam karo re. That's all you do. You will go through all these phases. Up and down, this and that is always going to happen. But just chant Hare Krishna. Such a beautiful line. Just one line. Unlimited hope is there in this one line. No matter what I am, sukh or dukh, if I just chant Hare Krishna, everything will be fine ultimately. Ultimately, if I am able to remember Krishna, that is perfection. Whether I am happy or not, whether I am in distress, that is just my individual mental frame of reaction or my perception of my life. And I'm happy, I'm sad. But if I'm able to remember Krishna in that, and that is from Krishna's point of view perfect. So this one line is something which is very powerful, which devotees need to always remember, all of us. There will be dukkha, distressful situations. But simply we remember, we take shelter of the mercy coming in the form of holy name. Sukhe dukhe bhulo na ko, vadane hari naam bolore, gaye gora madhur swarai. So even though Bharat Maharaj's pastime may spark off elements of despondency, I thought I'll just speak on this because it is a very terrible pastime of somebody falling down from great heights. Unless we become hopeless, I thought we should have the other counter view also. That we feel, it's possible. I may not be at the stage of Bharat Maharaj, I may be very low, but still it's possible. It's imminently possible. It's always possible. Because I am always in touch with the mercy of Guru and Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions and comments? Jai. Chandra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.